back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. You want to be in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. A bunch of texts to get to. We will get to those in due course. Still come on the program about an hour from now. Former Secretary of State John Merrill, we'll hear from him and see if we can figure out what he's going to do, if he's going to run. I don't expect an announcement, not trying to tease that, but we'll do what we can. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, my colleague at Breitbart News, Bradley Jay, will make time for us, and we're going to get a sense of some things going on inside Washington, D.C. He's our Capitol Hill reporter there for Breitbart. But joining us now, a blast from the past. It's been a while, but I am glad that we are able to get him back on the program. My good friend from North Alabama, former Congressman Mo Brooks, joins the program. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. About to go do some whitewater canoeing, and I'm taking a trip into the Smokies with about 20 people.
Oh, yeah. So tell us, you've been out of the fray for a little while. I know you're still kind of active in some of the Republican Party politics internally, but what have you been up to?
Well, when you've got 14 grandkids, 8 kids and kids-in-law, and a beautiful wife, and homes to maintain, you stay pretty busy. I do dabble a little bit in politics. You know, I'm not at all happy with what's been going on in Washington, D.C., quite frankly, for about 2 decades now, and the main cause of concern is our deficit and debt. It doesn't seem that it makes any difference whether it's Republicans or Democrats. Democrats vote against it when it's Republicans spending the money, and Republicans vote against it when the Democrats are spending the money, but neither of them has shown any kind of semblance of financial restraint.
Well, and we can hit on that. The big, beautiful bill, I know you've been a critic of it, but what do you do there? 535 members of the Congress, and I don't know that you could get it much better. You would lose votes on both sides. I mean, you're watching this, and I understand the Rand Paul philosophy. I think it's a valid and important point of view, but it's just not workable under the current circumstances.
Well, if by not workable you mean doing the right thing for your country, and you won't, and instead you want to do the wrong thing, if you like the idea of debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy that will wreak more havoc with the Americans than anything in American history, with the possible exception of the Civil War, well, then yeah, vote for this legislation.
Well, yeah.
You gotta pay for it, Jeff. You just can't keep spending money we don't have. We've got over $1 trillion a year that we're spending in debt service. That's the highest in the history of the United States of America. That's roughly 20% of our tax revenue, poof, gone. We don't get anything from it anymore. We're paying for past excesses. Then you've got what's roughly a $2 trillion annual deficit. So that's, after you've done your debt service expense. And then you've got a $36 trillion deficit, and it's only hanging around $36 trillion because of the debt ceiling issue that this bill wants to blow by to the tune of $4 trillion. You got to be responsible. You got to live within your means. It's a simple solution. You have to cut spending. And if you can't cut spending, then get a whole bunch of different people up there who'll do the right thing for their country rather than sell us down the toilet.
And I don't disagree with you, and the debt's been a problem, but there are people who just don't believe that. They don't believe that the debt is going to catch up with us. I mean, that's what I'm convinced of.
I agree with you, and they're economic ignoramuses.
So, yeah, that's a fair criticism, but the problem is they also vote on these bills, and if you start trying to, when you start trying to tackle that problem, you lose their votes and nothing gets passed.
Well, you do the right thing, and you let the people who've done the wrong thing suffer the consequences at the polls, okay? You don't do the wrong thing because, gosh, that's the only thing we can do is the wrong thing. That doesn't make sense to me. You need to do what's in the best interest of your country. You have your vote. You vote accordingly with your beliefs as to what's in the best interest of the country, and you let the chips fall where they will. But right now, we've got debt junkies who absolutely control about 99% of what the Democratic Party does on the Democrat side of the aisle. And on the Republican side, you've got 90% or 85% of the Republicans who do the wrong thing. They just want to buy themselves some votes in the next election with money that we don't have to borrow to get, can't afford to pay back, and is going to bring about a doomsday scenario. No country has been able to do what we're doing long-term and survive the consequences with any kind of prosperity resembling what they had prior to doing what they did. Yet we willy-nilly are following the same dead-end path because we've got such weak leadership in Washington, D.C., at both the Republican and Democrat level, where they just wring their hands and they say, well, we can't do better. Well, dadgummit, do better, because your country needs you to do better. If we'd had this kind of attitude, we'd still, back in the 1700s, we'd still be a colony of the British.
Well, tell me this. I mean, is there any, there's got to be some virtue to the quote unquote big beautiful bill. I mean, are the tax cuts too excessive? I mean, what do you see is like good there?
Well, the tax cuts are wonderful, and there are a lot of expenditures on a lot of good things, say border security and national defense, just go down your list. But that does not negate the need to actually pay for it. I mean, why not just have no taxes? If that's the logic, take it to the extreme, have no taxes. Let's just borrow all the money we spend each year and make all voters happy until it all comes crashing down on top of us.
Well, you can talk about this, because what it appears to be, like, at least on the left, the Democrats, they don't view the tax code or the taxation system at the federal level as a financing mechanism. They look at it like this, that it's like a levels the playing field. It's a redistribution of wealth mechanism. I mean, I think that's the problem, that they don't really think about it in the right context. They look at it as a way to take from the rich and give to the poor, and that somehow that class envy works in their favor politically.
Well, that's one of the reasons that the Democrats do what they do, and they, in effect, buy votes with other people's money that was forcibly taken from them by the heavy hand of the government, where if you don't give us this money to redistribute to people who don't want to work for a living, then we're going to seize it, we're going to put you in jail, we're going to confiscate your assets. That's the kind of threat that the federal government has, and I understand it. You got to have tax collection, and so to some degree, you have to have coercive tools with which to get the money from those people who don't want to pay what the law requires them to pay. But right now, that is not the issue. The issue is the spending. You've got to have some people in Washington, D.C. who have the courage, who have the guts, who have the fortitude, who have the patriotism to do what our country needs doing so that we'll continue to have long-term prosperity, instead of condemning us to that national insolvency and bankruptcy that will do tremendous damage to the United States of America.
Well, and tell me this, you know, the because I've been all my life, we've talked about debts and deficits, and usually the country will inflate its way to some degree out of some of it, but I mean, what are you looking at? A timetable here. When does the doomsday happen?
Well, right now, let me digress for a moment to the biblical passage that talks about how a debtor has made his creditor his master. So that's where we are. And we've got debtors all around the globe. And all it takes to trigger a national insolvency and bankruptcy is for those creditors to say, we're not going to loan any more money to the United States of America. Not suddenly demand all payments of all amounts that have been loaned. That can continue to be paid out over the course of the loan agreement. But just to say they're not going to loan us any more money, and it comes crashing down. We have become the slaves of these foreign interests who at any point in time, at their will, doing everything legal, they can send us into a national insolvency and bankruptcy. That's one scenario where it could happen. There are plenty of other scenarios where it could happen, but the bottom line is we don't know. And unfortunately, with what's happening in Washington, D.C., it's my humble opinion that the question is no longer if we're going to suffer this debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy. The question is when.
Joined by former Congressman Mo Brooks here on the program. Well, there was an effort, and the DOGE effort, It looked very small potatoes to me. Like, yeah, big sums of money to you and I, but in the grand scheme of government, I mean, this was not really that much of a sizable percentage. What's your assessment of that and Musk effort? And now, like, this big, beautiful bill seems to negate a lot of that. But tell us, you know, they at least pay lip service to it?
Well, the Doge effort, from what I've been able to observe, was more mirage than substance. And I say that based on bottom line. The Congress has already passed, at the insistence of the presidency, a bill, this was in January or February, that during the president's term of office increases our expected debt burden by about $7 trillion, and over the next decade is projected to increase our debt burden by about $19 trillion, which begs the question, if the Doge cuts are real, then why do we need to have these new record debt levels added to what we already have? And so that's what first aroused my suspicion. And then I also began to discern that time after time after time, these purported cuts were not definite cuts. They were maybe cuts. And the courts have intervened on a regular basis and said, we're not going to do that. So has Doge done some things? Yes. Has it done enough? No. As evidenced by the legislation that Donald Trump pushed through the House and the Senate that increases that debt burden by roughly $7 trillion during the remainder of Donald Trump's term, and $19 trillion is the projection over the next decade.
Well, do you think this? Now, look at how Democrats have demagogued all of this, and the sky is falling, Chicken Little, you can name your Democrat, and they have spoken out about the Doge cuts, which, as you say, seem paltry in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, the politics of it, you wonder if there's something there. Do the American people have even the appetite or the desire to go in this kind of draconian direction and do what they got to do, as you say? Or, you know, this is not necessarily what they voted for. Like, you start losing elections because the freebies aren't coming.
Well, first, I absolutely disagree with your use of the word draconian. I know that's what the Democrats say, but it is not draconian to live within your means. That's what Americans do every day. Hundreds of millions of Americans do that. Now, some don't, and they go into bankruptcy, okay? And it's a different thing when an individual goes into bankruptcy versus when a business goes into bankruptcy versus when your central government goes into bankruptcy. When an individual goes into bankruptcy, that's bad, but the damage is pretty much limited to that individual and that individual's creditors. When a central government goes into national insolvency or bankruptcy, it's horrendous. But what the Democrats are doing is they're trying to make things appear to be worse than they in fact are in order to cultivate votes. And you get right down to the nub of the problem when you start talking about the citizenry. There are too many people in America who think that they are entitled to a free ride on the backs of those people who have worked for a living. And that is a major problem. Alexis de Tocqueville, who was a French philosopher of politics back in the 1800s, he predicted the demise of the American Republic over a century ago, almost two centuries ago, based on his belief that sooner or later the voting public would realize that they could use the power and force and effect of the central government to steal other people's money in order to give it to themselves. And his projection, unfortunately, is likely to come to fruition in the upcoming future. So that's where we are. We've got to get a citizenry that gets back to the work ethic, that understands that there are limitations on what the government can do. And in a land of freedom and in a land of liberty, your duty as a citizen is to take advantage of those things so that you become self-sufficient, not to take advantage of weak politicians by demanding that you get free stuff or else you're going to vote against those politicians. That is the wrong way to go, but unfortunately, there are a lot of voters who like going the wrong way.
Well, and that's the problem, right? We are a government for, of, and by the people, and people vote for this, and they don't, you know, they're not down with the program here on this. They don't see the. They obviously don't have any moral or ethical objections to government freebies, but they're not gonna vote that way either. And until that time comes, I mean, this is sort of what we're stuck with, I'm afraid.
Well, you're exactly right. And to a large degree, voters believe this approach will work. When it won't, it's a dead end path, but they believe it. because the political leaders are leading them astray, telling them that this is the way to go in order to get those folks' votes. The message is, hey, vote for me. I'll give you more free stuff. Long term, that is a dead end path. It's going to result in a lot of damage, in particular to those who are not able to take care of themselves because they have not, over a long period of time, taken advantage of the opportunities that a free system gives you.
Last question. We'll get you out of here on this. Congressional baseball game last night. The post-Cedric Richmond era for the Republicans has been pretty, you've seen a dramatic turnaround. But did you get a chance to watch last night? What did you make of it?
I didn't watch all of it. I watched a pretty good bit. August Pfluger at third base made a great stab of a ground ball down the third baseline that saved us a few runs. Right now, quite frankly, the Republicans just have the upper hand. I don't know how much was paid to Cedric Richmond to get him to leave the House of Representatives and work under the Biden administration, but whatever it was well worth it to our winning efforts. And for those who don't know, Cedric Richmond is a former college pitcher, very, very good stuff. He was pitching. The Democrats just dominated us. I think they won 10 out of 11 games. The only one they lost was the day after they had an all-nighter on the House floor illegally protesting and not allowing business to take place. Well, they paid the price the next day at the baseball game where they were too tired and sleepy to play well.
Well, yeah, but it looks like a good run for Republicans right now. Congressman, let's do it again sometime. I always appreciate getting you on. Safe travels to you.
Thank you. Anytime you wish, Jeff, all you got to do is call.
All right. Former Congressman Mo Brooks there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Put his hands on my shoulder, then in tears he said, Patches, I'm depending.